unless they declare Ramazapo a Mazhajiju, they're sick, and also Masseki Mentor, who's got a funeral of her brother. Thank you. And then Mr. Hololo will be joining us later.
Good, thank you. And then I think we will start this morning by introducing, first of all, if our honourable members would introduce themselves.
Thanks, Chair. My name is Rose Sondro, a member of this committee.
My name is Aubrey Mugwena, a member of the Portfolio Committee.
Yes, my name is Peter van der Halen, ook van hierdie komitee.
Mani van Dijk, lid van die komitee.
Gerard Koornhof, member of the Portfolio Committee, Public Enterprises.
Lan Schering, member of the Portfolio Committee. Thank you.
Phyllis DeFito, manager of Transnet Limited.
Anybody else from Transnet here? Yes, let's come here.
Anuj Singh, Acting Chief Financial Officer, Transnet Limited.
Helen Walsh, General Manager Group Tax from Transnet Limited.
All right, that's Transnet, and then we have from the Treasury, National Treasury. Not here yet. Okay. Sorry,
Madam Chair, I did get an SMS. They are on their way, but they're having some traffic issues.
Yes, we do have some serious traffic issues this morning on the road, so I apologise for that too. And then we also have DPE.
I'm Adam Sedat. I'm the Acting Deputy Director General from DPE.
I'm Melanchthon Magobe. I'm the Chief Director Legal Counsel from DPE.
Okay. Then we have somebody from Alexander Forbes.
Yeah, I'm Anton Nell, valuator to the fund employed by Alexander Forbes.
Right, then we have, do we have anybody else? I know we do have the representatives from the pensioners. Would you like to introduce yourselves? Thank you.
Madam Chair, John Venwell, Sasquan Association of Retired Persons.
Chair, member of Pension Fund for Railways and Harbours.
Daniel Stenman, ook van Pension Harbours, Spoorweë en Havens.
John Olsen, representative of Club 60 National Committee. Thank you.
As to where, transport vote for Club 60 King Ilovo.
Solomon Edward, President of the Transport Pension Association.
My name is John Korobla. I'm a trustee elected by the pensioners of the Second Fund Benefit Fund.
I'm Nolwa Zigaba, also the trustee elected by Transnet.
Rion Lowe, also a trustee elected by Transnet.
Piet Maritz, I'm the principal officer of the fund.
My name is Golden Crumbs, also from the pensioners Transnet.
Thank you. And then our back row there. Our back benches. Can you just indicate where you're from?
My name is Faith Kwaza. I'm from the Parliamentary Communication Services.
My name is Thabo Mokone. I'm from SABC News.
right, everybody. Okay. Welcome. Welcome. Yes. Do you want to come to the front seat here? You're okay. I know. You like that grand entrance, eh? All right. Thank you very much. Now I think we've got a feel of who is here. And again, just to say to you a very warm welcome. At our meeting on the 28th of July, Transnet made a presentation. We also heard from the pensioners, people who were representing the pensioners, about the difficulties that they were experiencing as a result of the 2% statutory increase in their pensions. And the concerned pensioners view this 2% increase as a result of poor management of the fund in the past, and if the deficit was settled, the increase would have been able to have adjusted to inflation. That's just the gist. I'm not going to go over the entire presentation that we had. I think suffice it to say that our chairperson, Faye Mentor, is on record committing ourselves to doing something about this particular issue, and we would like to see some resolve to that. And maybe even we might be able to reach that today. I need to also stress that all parties in this committee have been seized with this. We all share the concern of the pensioners, and we need to now try to apply our minds. At our last meeting, the committee resolved that Transnet should prepare a detailed presentation on the different scenarios and the impact of the proposed increases to the fund. The Department of Public Enterprises and National Treasury should make input into the proposal in the next meeting. The committee raised concern regarding the non-representativity of the black pensioners. I'm very pleased to be able to see some of those members here today. And the Transnet made an undertaking to ensure that the black widows are represented in the next meeting of the committee. So having said that, I think we understand the background from which we have come. We spent a whole meeting looking at that. We understand the merging of the funds. We understand the 2% statutory increase. We understand the limitation of funds, and we also understand the pain that some people have gone through. So somehow we need to strike a consensus here today in how we are going to move forward. So having said that, I would now like to hand over to Transnet, and my understanding is certainly from the resolve at our last meeting was that this would be a combined effort, and I take it that the three have been in consultation. So I would now like to hand over to you and for you to make your presentation. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chairperson. As you mentioned, the fact that we're here today comes from the fact that we were here on the 28th of July. And there were obviously certain requests made of Transnet, National Treasury, and the Department of Public Enterprises. Since then, we've collaborated between the parties, and as we sit here today, we will present to the committee the joint scenarios that have been developed between the three parties. And the scenarios we present here today is supported by Alexander Forbes, the actuaries to the fund. I think in just an overview from Transnet's perspective, I think, you know, we've done well for our pensioners in terms of being able to provide the bonuses and the cash flow neutrality of the pensioners with respect to the increases over the last 3 years. And I think the scenarios that we're presenting today are sensible and fair scenarios. And I think it's in the light of what you've mentioned, Madam Chairperson, in that it's a consensus scenario that we've presented here today that we think that will be fair to all parties concerned. From our perspective, Ms. Helen Walsh will be taking us through the detail of the presentation, and as and when required, we will call on our colleagues of National Treasury and DPE as may be required.
Thank you, Anoush. Thank you, Madam Chair. If I can go straight into the presentation. The requests that were raised at the last meeting were that the fund consider a rule amendment to provide for 50% pension-elected trustee representation on the board of the TSDBF. We did request through the principal officer of the fund that the Board of Trustees table this matter at their next meeting. My understanding is that they have considered it and have therefore proposed a rule amendment to do this, which will come through to Transnet during the course of the month. So that matter is progressing. We were then asked to provide a range of scenarios for consideration regarding the request for amendments to the increased policy rule, and I have presented these on slide 2 here. The very first line, which says current scenario 2% pension increase, is what the current rules of the fund provide for. As at the 31st of March 2010, based on the report from the actuaries, the assets of the fund, which is what's available for distribution, is 19.6 billion rand. The liabilities of the fund, excluding reserves, is 16.2 billion rand, and then provision needs to be made for reserves of approximately 640 million rand. This means that the fund is currently in a surplus position of 2.8 billion rand. If one were to look at various scenarios with effect from 1 April 2010, if a change to the pension increase rule were to be amended to provide for targeting 75% of inflation going forward, the liabilities of the fund would then be valued at 19.2 billion rand. The liabilities of the assets under all scenarios do not change. The fund is a closed fund. No additional income comes into the fund. So under all scenarios, the assets values remain unchanged. It's the liability values that differ depending on what the pension increase rule is going to be. One can see there that with a 75% prospective CPI-linked increase, the fund moves into a very small deficit of 440 million rand, equating to a funding level of just under 98%. It is likely, though, that assuming that the performance of the fund continued as it has and as is expected, that the 75% of CPI-linked increase policy would be able to be achieved through the life of the fund. We've then also considered looking at the increase rule targeting 100% of CPI increase, and moving along then to the surplus column, one can see that if one were to target 100% of CPI based on the asset value and what the liability value would be recalculated at, the fund would move into a 3 billion rand deficit. The scenario thereafter, which is called uplifting the base from 2006, what that does is it takes a pensioner's pension as at 1 April 2006, and it says what would that pension have been if the base pension had increased by 75% of CPI during the 2007, 8, 9, and 10 financial years. And if we were to use that as the pensioner's base pension from the 1st of April 2011 going forward, and then give 75% of CPI-linked increases on top of that, what would the position be for the fund? And the fund would move into a deficit of 3.8 billion rand. We've then done the exact same calculation, but using 100% of CPI, so uplifting the pension from 2006 to 2010 by 100% of CPI over those 4 years, and then applying that going forward with future increases being 100% of CPI with a deficit of 8.5 billion. I must just point out that the CPI assumption that's been used in all of these calculations is based on government's existing inflation targeting policy and is therefore using an average CPI from now until 2046, which is when the fund would come to an end, of 5.92%. there obviously is a risk that if inflation goes well beyond that, that the deficits that we see coming through would be significantly more. The final scenario that's been presented is where we take from the start of the fund, which is 1 November 2000, for each pensioner, we apply a 75% of CPI increase that has been from 2000 to 2006. And then from 2006 to 2010, we apply 100% CPI increase to the base pensions of the pensioners, and then we apply 100% CPI increases going forward as well. And the fund would be, from an actuarial point of view, in a deficit of 9.8 billion rand. In addition to the 9.8 billion rand, if one had to pay out that upliftment of the base, in other words, if one had to say, well, what did you receive from 2000 to 2010 in terms of a pension base, and what is that difference, it would require an additional 1.6 billion rand on top of the 9.8 billion rand that's shown up on the presentation. What I've presented on page 3 then just talks to what I mentioned earlier about what happens if CPI significantly changes. So what we've done is doubled CPI from the assumption of 5.92% to the 11.84%, and one can see in comparison to the prospective 75% CPI increase, which on the previous slide the fund moved into a small deficit of 440 million. Under an inflation doubling scenario, that deficit would move up to 9.9 billion. Similarly, on the previous slide, we showed the 100% CPI increase prospectively giving rise to a deficit in the fund of 3 billion in today's terms based on our current inflation targeting policy. That would move up to just under 21 billion if inflation were to double. Slide 4 is taking the TFDBF payment history to a pensioner. It's just using a starting base of 1,000 Rand per month for illustrative purposes, and saying that if a pensioner on the 1st of April 2006 was receiving a monthly pension of 1,000 Rand, over the last 4 years, taking into account what they've actually received from the fund, being the 2% statutory increase, as well as the ad hoc bonuses that have been made by the fund, they would have received 50,541 Rand. We've then compared that to what they would have received if, from the 1st of April 2006 to the 1st of April 2010, they were provided with increases of their pension of 75% of CPI. And, sorry, I misreferred. The pensioners have actually received 53,734.91, and if they'd received a 75% CPI increase, they would have received 53,752.68, which translates to a small difference of 17 Rand and 76 cents over a four-year period for a pensioner receiving 1,000 Rand per month. I've then provided the same example, but assuming a prospective 100% CPI increase, and there you can see that the difference is 1,695. In other words, they would have received 1,695 Rand more, which is just under 2 months' pension over a four-year period. The slide 6 is basically a summary of, which is based on, of the scenarios presented, the only scenario that is affordable based on the current funding position of the fund is the 75% CPI increase prospectively. Because of the examples that I showed on page 3, which shows that effectively over the last 4 years, pensioners from a cash flow perspective, not from their base pension has only improved by 2% per annum, but from a pure cash flow perspective, have received the equivalent cash flow, or as close as it, 17 Rand difference, of receiving a 75% inflation-linked increase, as I say, from a cash flow perspective. Very similarly, a very similar position is achieved under the 100% CPI scenario. We do acknowledge, as I've said, that the pension base is lower than if actual CPI increases had been granted, and we have looked at what it would cost
to uplift the base pension for pensioners with effect from 1 April 2010 if a 75% CPI increase were implemented, and that would cost the fund an additional 3.32 billion rand, or alternatively, if a 100% CPI increase were used to uplift the base pension, 5.56 billion rand. If I can just take the opportunity to explain to the committee.
Chairperson, a point of order. Chairperson, I see we move now to the...
Yes.
Sorry, Chairperson, through you. I see we move now to the Transport Pension Fund. As I recall, the chairperson of the committee asked last week that only the TSDBF is on the table today and not the other pension fund. So it might confuse members, so that I call on you that we, as agreed, that we just deal with the TSDBF today. Thank you.
Okay. Can I just have some comment from any of the other members?
Chairperson, the order paper says it's a report back of Transnet. And in the previous meeting, Transnet was requested to give a feedback on the inputs from the committee. And if I recall correctly, both funds were at stake at that time. And Transnet has now made a presentation or prepared a presentation based on the two funds. And I think it will be very unfair in Midway now to stop it. So my proposal is we ask Transnet to complete their presentation for the benefit of the committee, and then we can go into a discussion.
Thank you, Dr. Van Beek. I think let's do that, and then we will only deal with the...
I will go along. Can I just ask then Transnet when they talk about the one, just to make it very clear to us which one they're talking about. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Sorry, Chairperson. The guiding principle would be the 80,000 beneficiaries of the part on the fund. In other words, my understanding is that the 2% affects 80,000 people. Am I right? So that it would be helpful if we can only focus on those, on the fate of those ones. We can hear about other things that are peripheral, but I think of the crux of the matter, the 2% affects the 80,000 people only. That's where the adjustment must be made, or otherwise.
All right. Can we just have the clarity on the number of members, and then I think let's move forward. But when we've completed the presentation, we will only deal with the DSTBF. Okay? Thank you. No, can we just please proceed here?
Chairperson, on a point of order, we've made a ruling. Can we ask Transnet to complete the presentation? Thank you.
No, thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The reason for the inclusion here of the TPF scenarios, I'm talking to the Transnet subfund of the Transport Pension Fund. There's approximately 4,500 Transnet pensioners in that subfund, and that subfund has rules very similar to the TSDBF, i.e. a statutory 2% increase. But this fund does not have the ad hoc bonus rule like the TSDBF. Nonetheless, the next three slides are talking only to the Transnet subfund of the Transport Pension Fund. We've prepared the same scenarios for different increase rules of the Transport Pension Fund, Transnet subfund. And similarly, the fund is very well funded currently under the 2% statutory increase rule, with a surplus of 983 million rand and a funding level of 130%. Were a prospective 75% linked increase policy to be proposed, the surplus of the fund would reduce to 300 million. That would reduce further to a deficit of 870 million if a 100% prospective CPI increase rule were to be suggested. If we were to uplift the base of these pensioners from 2006 using 75% of CPI, it would basically result in the fund being in a neutral position that would be 100.4% funded. But if the base were uplifted using 100% of CPI increase for the last 4 years, it would move into a deficit position of 871 million. Very similarly then, using the 75% of CPI to uplift the base of the pensioners from 2000 to 2006, and then applying 100% CPI increase going forward to 2010, the fund would move into a deficit position of $1.1 billion. And in order to settle that upliftment to the pensioners would cost an additional 300 million rand. Very similarly as well, we've presented the scenario if inflation targeting did not achieve the 5.92% that it's looking to, and if it were to double, the deficit of the fund would move into 2 billion rand based on the prospect of 75% CPI increase, and into a deficit of 5 billion rand if one had to apply 100% of CPI and that had to double. We've presented as well the TPF payment history, and this does present a different position to the TSDBF. As explained, the rules of the TPF, the Transnet subfund, also provide for only a 2% statutory increase. However, there is no ad hoc bonus rule in the Transnet subfund of the TPF. The fund, however, is better funded than the TSDBF, and if a 75% of CPI increase were to be implemented, one could afford to back pay the pensioners to take care of the difference between what they received and what they would have received, and still provide for CPI percent linked increases prospectively of 75%. Effectively, this fund then could ensure that its pensioners were on the same cash flow position as the TSDBF. The pension comparisons that are presented are also a request that came from the meeting of the 28th of July, and we've listed a number of funds here together with their characteristics, because as we note on the slide, no fund closely resembles the TSDBF, which is not only a closed fund, but has no active members. So no additional people can join the fund, and in addition to that, no contributions are received by the fund from members. The increased policy of these various funds is shown on the right-hand side of the table. In all cases, bar one, which is the GEPF, the increased policy ranges between 75% of inflation and 100% of inflation, all, however, subject to affordability. In other words, those CPI-linked increases are not guaranteed. They are based on the funding position of the fund and affordability of the fund. The GEPF, however, their increased policy is that at least 75% of inflation. We must point out, however, that they have approximately 318,000 pensioners, but they do have more than 1.2 million rand active members. So a significantly larger fund than the TSDBF, but a fund that does receive contributions and has active members. We were requested to comment on the legislative provisions of the amendment. The Transnet Pension Fund Act, as amended, provides that the control and management of the TSDBF, we're now talking about the TSDBF only, and that benefits due to pensioners and beneficiaries are governed by the rules of the fund, which are set out in a schedule to the Transnet Pension Fund Act. Rule 24 of those rules provides for the statutory increase of 2%. Rules can be amended by the Board of Trustees of the TSDBF together with the approval of Transnet, provided that any rule amendment that's likely to affect the financial position of the fund must also be approved by the Minister of Public Enterprises, acting with the concurrence of the Minister of Finance. We have noted that Parliament has the constitutional prerogative to take steps that may be necessary within its powers and as governed by the rules of Parliament if it wishes to pursue legislative amendments. The pension increase scenario then that can be considered as a change from the current pension rules, which is a 2% statutory increase as well as the payment of ad hoc bonuses, would, based on the financial impact of the increase rule, be a prospective 75% of CPI. This is a increase policy that is affordable based on the current funding position of the fund, and therefore would be something that the actuaries of the fund could agree to if proposed by the Board of Trustees. The Pension Fund Act has a requirement that any increase policy is set must be set to aim to award a percentage of CPI, which has been interpreted, my understanding, to mean that it is subject to affordability. A guarantee for an increase policy is not a requirement of the Act. As we've shown on the previous slide, nor is a guaranteed increase policy the norm amongst pension funds. And we're not aware, and have also asked the actuaries in this regard, are not aware of any large public company that has a guaranteed pension increase policy as a percentage of CPI. In line with the increased rules of other funds then, the proposed, if a amendment to the increase policy were to be proposed, we would suggest that this be subject to the fund being able to afford such increases, that the actuaries provide written confirmation that the increases are affordable, and it would also require the approval by the employer, as is currently the case. The rule, therefore, providing for the 2% statutory increase would be repealed, and a revised rule providing for a 75% of CPI-linked increase subject to affordability would be brought in. Similarly, the rule providing for ad hoc bonus payments by the TSDBF would be repealed. Transnet, not the fund, but Transnet would continue, subject to its affordability, to making ex gratia payments to pensioners with long service and low pensioners, which it has done over the last few years and has always and would continue to do.
Sorry, just a point of clarification, Chairperson. Helen, are you saying that the bonuses are periodic contributions are made by Transnet outside the fund itself?
Yes. Chair, if I can clarify, what we have, the TSDBF is an...
Sorry, I wonder if I could just suggest we write at the end of the presentation, and then we'll take, that's a very important question, and we'll take that, if we can just do that. We write at the end.
I'll make sure I do address that. Any increase in excess of 75% that results in a funding level for the TSDBF falling below 90%, would require a funding solution that would need to be reached outside of Transnet. I've set out on the final slide the rule amendment process. The rule amendments would need to be drafted, and any rule amendment would need to be drafted, and the financial impact would need to be reviewed and reported on by the fund's actuaries. Any proposed rule amendment would therefore need to be presented at the TSDBF Board of Trustee meeting, and subject to approval by the TSDBF, it would be tabled at the Transnet Board of Directors meeting. If approved by the Transnet Board of Directors, the proposed rule amendments, which would have a financial impact, would then need to be forwarded to the Department of Public Enterprises for consideration and approval by the Minister of Public Enterprises, and also for consideration and concurrence by the Minister of Finance. Once the proposed rule amendment, if at all, is approved, it would need to be gazetted, and once gazetted, it could then be implemented. That is the last page of this presentation. There was a further request at the meeting for a breakdown of the membership statistics of the Transnet Second Defined Benefit Fund. I do have that. I know it has been distributed. Do I need to run through that here?
Thank you. Just let me get some guidance from our members. Would we like to have that presentation? It's not a very long one, so that we get some idea of who forms part of the membership of that.
Yes, can we ask them to finish, and then we'll ask questions?
The breakdown of the membership stats was prepared by Alexander Forbes, so I'll ask Anton now to talk very briefly on that.
Thank you. In terms of the membership as of 31 March 2010, this is based on TSDBF only. We were asked to classify or, you know, break down the membership in terms of race classifications that we had on the record. And I just want to make 3 points before we get into the tables. The first one is the race classification is fairly static in terms of the historical admin records of the fund. The race field of pensioners and especially the spouses as members are deceased are not actively maintained by the administrators, so as you will see there is some missing race fields on the data. And you know, the last point is just, you know, the numbers should be used with caution and sensitivity. In terms of the next slide, the total membership, and I realize the numbers is perhaps slightly small to, you know, for everybody to read, but in essence what we've done on the left hand rows, we classified all the pensioners by race or the race records that we've got on. Some records we don't have, white, Indian, colored and black, and then pensioner types, pensioner, the second column being a pensioner that actually worked at Transnet, that retired from the fund, the spouse, that's the spouse of a deceased pensioner, children, students and disabled children, there's not a lot of them, but that are minor dependents, you know, of pensioners that either died in service or were still dependent on them after, you know, if they died after retirement. If you look at the right-hand column, the totals in terms of the 75,000 pensioners, 75,114 pensioners, the total average pension payable to them, the bottom right, you know, number in the table is 2,328 rand per pensioner per month. That is split between, at the top, 6,600 pensioners where we don't have any race classification available. That's mainly spouses of previously deceased pensioners, an average pension of 1,200 rand per month. White pensioners, 40,000 pensioners of the 75,000, having with an average pension of 3,561 rand per month. Indian pensioners at 326 pensioners, 1,200 average pension per month. Coloured, 2,783 pensioners, average pension of 920, and at the bottom, 25,337 black pensioners, average pension 839 rand. Then, if you look at the columns towards, you know, the bottom, the average pensions, as you can see, the average pensioner's pension is 2,944. There is 31,300 pensioners, and spouses' pensions, there are actually 43,000 spouses with an average pension of 1,908 rand per month pension. So that's a summary based on the total membership. We have also endeavoured to split the member or prepare this table on members' actual service within the fund. Thanks, Helen. You can go next slide. In terms of people that retired with between 0 and 10 years service, the results of the table are exactly as per the previous table, just, you know, carving out the people with 0 to 10 years service. And as you can see there, the average pensions in terms of the setup are a lot lower. And, you know, if you just look at the bottom right-hand side, an average pension of 1,307 rand compared to the total pensions, that's slightly higher. I don't know if there's any other issues you want me to address on that, because if we go to the next slide, in the 10 to 20 year service, what you see, the average pension in terms of this group slightly different than the previous slide. What I must just point out that this slide is slightly distorted by the previously disadvantaged widows, that because of the historical data not being available, was assumed to have 15 years service. When they, you know, when they retired, in terms of, and then the 10 to 20 years, Ellen, and then the last slide, people retiring with 20 years plus service, you know, obviously the higher average pensions at, if you look at the bottom right column, 2,953 per month, and, you know, in terms of the total of 75,000 pensioners, 47,000 pensioners, or close to two-thirds of the pensioners, actually retired from the fund with more than 20 years service. And then the last slide, you know, stepping on from that, what we were asked at the previous meeting, a number was quoted as 13.42% being, you know, the effect of bonuses paid by Transnet into the fund, that 5.5 to 3.42 and 0% over the last 3 years, the statutory increases of 2% per annum, as well as the bonuses paid by the fund of 1.5%, 8.5% and 15.33% over the last 3 years, we've totaled those up, and the average payment over the last 3 years was calculated at 13.42%, you know, and that's just, you know, the derivation of that number. I think the point was taken that this was not an increase in the base, it's not ongoing, but the payment is 13.42%. That's it from my side. Thanks.
Thank you very much for that. Let me just, before we proceed, Ms. Avril Halstead, yes, from Treasury, Chief Director, yes, thank you, Sector Oversight, and then we had, yes, another member, Honourable Member Gololo, coming. I think you've been caught up in the terrible snarl-up with the traffic, have you? All right, but welcome. Members, I think let me open this. Can we do it in two sections? We're not going to deal with the our agenda clearly states the TSBDF thing, okay, the second thing. So I'm going to ask if there are any points of clarification first on the basis of what the presentation has given us, members, and then we'll move on to perhaps how we're going to move forward and some of the suggestions we might have there. Thank you. And I think, all right, let's take that down. Honourable Mokoena.
On a point of order, Treasury, can we just get clarity whether Treasury has also a presentation to make? If not, I agree that we go on for clarity questions and ask questions to Transnet. But if there's another presentation or for DPE, let's just clarify whether this is a presentation and we can address that. That's fine. Then I support you going on in this way. If there are other presentations, let's just get clarity how we're going to handle that.
My understanding was that this was a comprehensive, you know, the three in one. And can we just, through the microphones, hear from you, please, whether that, in fact, is the case?
From the DPE side, no, this is a joint presentation from which we concur with them on what they've presented.
Thank you. Treasury?
It's just the same. We've prepared this presentation jointly.
Just to confirm, this is the only presentation that we've got. All right. Thank you. Honourable Member Mokoena, Honourable Member Van Dalen, Honourable Member Kurnoff, Dr. Kurnoff.
Chairperson, just to consolidate my comprehension of the issue, the total number of beneficiaries or claimants are 80,000. Is that the case? Are we dealing with the claims of beneficiaries who are entitled to 80,000? That's number one. Number two, the periodic bonuses that are paid by Transnet, on what basis is Transnet paying out these bonuses? because the fund is closed and there is no performance. I appreciate that there is that good gesture, but I just understand on what basis does Transnet need to pay in it. And number three, is that all what Transnet can do? Is that where the liability of Transnet stops, that we as Transnet, the fund is closed, and all we can do is that periodically give bonuses as finish and slap. Why is Transnet limited its obligation to the bonuses only? I just want clarification. Maybe we can pick up the issues for later on. Yeah.
Thank you, Honourable Fandalis.
Yes, Madam Chairperson. I just wanted to know the 19 billion in the first slide that I showed on the one side, that the 19.661 billion rand, is that, they say that's a given, it's fixed, it can't change. So is that money not invested that it makes an earning and then, you know, that amount is interest carrying? When they work out the life of the pension, they say, well, you know, we take the interest of the CPIX into account, but they don't tell us, you know, what the projected earning of this fund is going to be, or is that money just lying, you know, in a safe somewhere, and every time they dish it out and it doesn't get filled up? I wanted to know that. And then it Transnet is saying that, you know, these pensioners do receive at the moment more or less the same as what they would have received had it been the 75% of CPIX. But in the end, then I don't understand why it should cost more. Then it should be more or less the same amount on the bottom. Why must it be such a big amount difference? If it's going to be the same as what it was in the end, why is there such a big difference to the in total of money? It's just some point of clarity I need to get around. Thank you.
Dr. Kernoff?
Listen, thank you, and thank you for Transnet for the comprehensive presentation. Can I ask just a comparison? You say if you carry on with a 2% per annum increase with the ad hoc bonus payments, are there guarantees in that, in that scenario, the 2% plus the ad hoc bonus payments? And when you were in front of this committee in July, you showed us some ad hoc bonuses paid since 2007. Including this year, so and it fluctuates from 1.5% in 2007 to 3%, 5.5%, 7%, and 8.33% in 20. So I just want to make sure that in that scenario, whether there are guarantees and what are the levels of the ad hoc bonuses and whether it fluctuates. That's one. Compared to, you talk about a 75% CPI. Increase per annum. But then at the same time, you say that there's no guarantee for the 75% CPI increase. I just want to clarify that. Linked to this, if we approve a 75% increase, CPI linked, what effect will that be, will it have on your pensioners that have fewer years of service, as well as a lower salary when they retire? I just want to get a feel what knock-on effect it will have towards that group of pensioners. That's my first comprehensive question. Secondly, that's going forward. I'm talking 2010 going into the future. Retrospectively, I don't know what you want to call it, a gratuity, a payback, a cash in pocket, retrospectively. It's from 2010 into the past. Just a simple clarification question. Where does the 2006 come from and the 2000? Was it structured changes in the fund? I just want some clarity. Why do you select 2000 and 2006? And then going back into the the past. You have an uplift base on a 75% or 100%. Is there a possibility also just to have a simple actuarial calculation of just assisting pensioners historically on any other base than a CPI-linked situation, using the reserves that you have, that I don't see here. I only pick up, the only retrospective that I picked up with in, on page 2 with your uplift base with an additional 1.6 billion. Do I sign it correctly? How do you calculate that 1.6 billion retrospectively? If I understand correctly, it's back to since 2000. Just unpack that for us, because what we're arguing as a committee, linking up to the first question, is we need to make a distinction going forward and correcting the past. If you can just clarify that before we move into funding questions and affordability and stuff like that.
Thank you, Honourable Dr. Van Wyk.
Chairperson, thank you. Chairperson, yes, I also just want to refer quickly just to the bonuses that's been paid on page 4 of their presentation. Now, if you look at page 4, I just want to know whether I understand it correct. On page 4 in the bonus column, in 2007, an amount of 183 rand was paid per annum. So if you divide it by 12, the people received 15 rand per month. And then in 2008, they received the 374 rand and 686. If you add it together and divide by 12, for that year they received a bonus of 89 rand per month. And then in 2009, they received 82 rand per month, and 2010, 99 rand per month. Now, Chairperson, these are the so-called bonuses. And as I understand it from the presentation, the previous time and today, it is once-off bonuses. It is not guaranteed, but it's been considered according to affordability every year. And as I understand it correctly, it also does not uplift the pension base. It is apart from their pension base. So this is just money in the envelope for that specific year. If you divide it by 12, that small amount per month, and that's it. So just I just want to know whether I'm correct on this. Chairperson, then, I want to add on what Dr. Koornhof, the Honourable Dr. Koornhof, also said, and I also want clarity on this. It's been said with our previous meeting that we would like to see the pensioners of Transnet being treated almost equally as if they are still civil servants, or as in the past they belong to the government employee pension fund. And when the South Africa Transport Services became Transnet, they actually kept the pensioners with them. You know, so it stood the responsibility of Transnet. I just want to know that as from 2000, my understanding is that the people received this 2% as determined by the rule as scheduled to the Act, only the 2%. Is that the reason, you know, that the calculations is done till 2000 to address the backlog? And my understanding is from 2006, that the rules of the government employee pension fund changed to 100% of CPI, and that is why your calculations also refer to 75% of CPI from 2000 till 2006, and then 100% of CPI from 2006 up to where we are sitting here today. And if Transnet then can give us a calculation, I'm also not very clear on what, on the same question of the Honourable Dr. Koornhof, the amount. If we address, let's call it a backlog, or a back pay, if you can call it that way. If we consider a back pay, what will be the cost, taking into account that pensions would have increased by 75% since 2000 up to 2006 and by 100% from 2006 till 2010. What is the amount of money that we are talking about if we say we consider a back pay from 2000? What will be that? I just want to get the exact amount. And then lastly, Chairperson, my understanding from the document is that a 75% of CPI increased on the low pension base from now on onwards is affordable within the fund. I just want to know whether I understand that correctly. I think it's been said. I just want to make absolute sure that if a 75% on the low pension base onwards is affordable in the fund. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much for those questions. I don't know that I have any others to add. And these are clarity-seeking questions now, except to say on the figures that you mentioned of the number of pensioners, I think I noticed that your 10 to 20 years seem to average out at a lot less than it seems to me that the greater the number, that should be the bigger amount, and it doesn't seem to look like that in your figures. So just a bit of clarity on that. Clarity. Let us take these, and then if we've got these answers. We haven't been answered in something else that's sitting there, we can come back. Is that okay? Thank you. Over to Transnet.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Between myself, Helen, and Anton, we'll try and resolve the questions that have been posed. Helen.
Okay, cool. Thank you. Member McQuena asked a question about the total number of beneficiaries of the TSDBF. That is 75,114 people, which covers your pensioner members plus spouses, as well as children, students, and disabled children that are entitled to receive monies from the fund. So the total...
In this closed one, in this closed fund.
In the TSDBF closed fund, yes. Sorry, on the bottom right.
There's a slide that actually gives us the demographics.
Yes, our member has some difficulty with his site. can you see the slide, honourable member? No, he can't. No, he has difficulty.
So far, yes.
Okay.
Then there was a further question from Member McQuena about the periodic base the bonuses paid by Transnet. In other words, not the ad hoc bonuses paid by the fund to its beneficiaries, but the bonuses paid by Transnet, on what basis those bonuses were being paid. It is purely out of recognition for the plight of the pensioners. And in particular, it focuses, the calculation of those payments focus in particular on those pensioners with long service, but despite that long service with very low pensions, as well as, in particular, the previously disadvantaged pensioners.
It's a conscience consideration.
Correct. And then the final question that Member McQuena asked was, is that all that Transnet can do? And I'd like an answer to address.
If I understood the question correctly, was with respect to the liability of Transnet with respect to the pensioners. I think we've addressed that the last time around, in that that's quite a complex legal matter between where the liability and guarantee actually lies between Transnet and National Treasury. And I think the committee took a decision the last time that it is really up to the committee to understand how it's going to be taking that forward. And that's why we're here today.
I think this perhaps relates also to the point that of the feeling that the funds were not managed. So there is there some liability on Transnet? Am I honourable member? Am I getting perhaps that?
You're absolutely correct, but That's why I had an idea that I must ask another question to beef up this one. You see, the point is this, that I'm trying to ask myself as well. The capping, the separation of the TSDBF from from the other current Transnet pension beneficiaries is because Transnet was corporatized. Is that the understanding? Now, in other words, we are keeping this DBS, TSDBF, treating it like a lake, separately apart from the ocean. Now, wouldn't it be a good idea just to bring the lake together with the ocean, so with one pool of pensioners, as opposed to this partitioning, because this is what has created this 2% story and disadvantages them against the rest of the current census. Because, I mean, it's the same organization, right? The only difference is it has corporatized. It's a question of history.
All right. I think, can we move on with the answers to the questions and taking that into account? Just before we do, I have been requested by Treasury they would like to make a statement. I understand.
I just want to comment on one of the questions at the end, so I think I'll wait until
the question
is ready. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Proceed.
Okay. Member Van Dalen asked about the $19.661 billion that was in the presentation today, the value of the assets, and I'd like to ask the actuary to comment on that.
Thank you. The 19.6 billion rand of assets in the fund, the monies are invested. As at the 31 March 2010 valuation, the expected future return on that asset was in the order of 8.6-8.7% per annum going forward. A lot of the assets are invested in appropriate vehicles to match the cash flow going forward in terms of the fund, because remember this fund has got 17 billion or 16.9 billion rand. In terms of that monies, the fund is dispersing in the order of 2 to 2.5 billion rand a year. So we can't invest that all in the equity market if we saw what happened over the last couple of years. So the fund has got the money is invested in an appropriate structure to produce the cash flows to pensioners as and when they arrive. So, yes, the money is invested.
This is the problem that I'm having, is that if the money, and just on a point of clarity, I need to know this, if the money is making 8% then, and the pensioners being paid 2%, then where is the rest of the 5% or 6% going in? My mathematics is a little wrong. Yeah. I mean, is it going into profit somewhere? Is Transnet taking that? Why can't they then have the 8% increase that the money is making every year? I don't understand that.
Thank you.
Okay. If I can continue, that's the asset side of that. We value the assets at fair or market value. It's expected to get that return over time. What we then do to value the liabilities, say we take a guy's pension at 1,000 rand per month as at 31 March 2010. What we then do is we project that pension going forward, and I think we'll get to your next question to say why does the liabilities differ on the different pension increases. Currently, the first scenario where the pension valuation is undertaken, we allow for the 2% per annum going forward. So for simplicity's sake, a guy's pension that's 1,000 rand per month now, 1,020 in a year from now, up 2%, 1,040, etc. going on. What we then do is we discount the current pension plus the future pension increase promise back to today's terms based on the 8.6%. So we project the pension and cash flows going forward. We discount that at 8.6% to compare with the asset values. And that's where we get the funding level of 116% or assets being 19.6 billion with liabilities at 16 point odd billion. If you increase the pension increase policy to 100% of CPI, instead of discounting back 1,000 rand per month, 1,020 rand per month going forward, 1 year rents, etc., the pension would be 1,000 rand in the first year, 1,060 in the next year, etc. So your cash flows would be a lot more. So if you discounted at 8%, would arrive at a higher present value of liabilities.
Yeah, we're dealing with very technical stuff here. I know this actuarial stuff is not easy to understand. So I think let's move forward and try and get the total picture, and then we'll come back. I think what we're trying to get at, we're so afraid, you know, one hears so much today of all the fraud and mismanagement, so we're not accusing you of that. But, we just need to understand how it comes together, but I think we can move forward. We're not going to understand it in detail, I can tell you now. All right, thank you.
Mr. van Dalen just said he's now confused, but on a higher level.
Sorry, I didn't hear that, but that was obviously very funny. yes, I just want to also welcome now in our midst, I think Dr. Abrasini has been at another meeting, and to say welcome to you, Honourable Member. We have just taken the first round of questions for clarification. And we will come back when we get to the end, if there are any, and then we'll take, you know, the moving forward scenario, if we can then get to that. Is there something else you have that you want to raise? Or you're just indicating that you're here? Yes, all right, we'll come back when we just finish this round. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam.
Dr. Quinhoff's questions.
Yes. Dr. Quinhoff, the 2% statutory increase that's currently in the rules is a guaranteed 2%. So every pensioner's pension will increase by the 2% every year. The ad hoc bonuses, which are the bonuses paid by the TSDBF, the fund itself, those rule amendments were brought, the rule amendment was brought in to provide for those payments in 2007. Those ad hoc bonuses are not guaranteed. They are based on the affordability of the fund to pay those bonuses and yet retain the monies required to pay the future pensions, including the 2% increase, which is guaranteed.
I understood that it was Transnet that was paying the bonuses. Now you're saying it's paid by the TSDBF.
Honourable Member, yes, we have two things here. There are bonuses paid by the fund and there are bonuses paid by Transnet. There are two things here. So can we proceed?
In responding to Dr. Quinhoff's questions, I'm then only referring to the bonuses that are payable by the second defined benefit fund in terms of its rules. The ad hoc bonuses since 2007 have fluctuated but have constantly increased based on the percentage has increased based on the funding position of the fund. So in the July presentation, we showed how the funding position of the fund had improved quite a lot over time, and in particular over the last 3-4 years, primarily the cash flow matching transaction that was entered into created a lot of certainty. And as one has greater stability in the fund and greater certainty, one can pay bonuses, ad hoc bonuses, at a higher level than previously. The 75% of CPI-linked increase policy, you're quite correct, Dr. Quinhoff, would be targeted, and it would not be guaranteed. It would be dependent on the performance of the fund. So the assumptions around the return on assets, the assumptions around the obligations, and importantly, the assumptions around CPI over the medium to long term would impact on the ability of the fund to pay 75% of CPI. The 75% of CPI-linked increase, you asked about the effect on persons with fewer years service and lower salaries. Out of the 75,411 members of the Transnet Second Defined Benefit Fund, approximately 31,000 or 32,000 of those pensioners receive less than the state old age pension each month, which would mean that they are potentially entitled to claim from the state old age pension, and the amount that they would receive would take cognizance of the pension that they receive from the TSDBF. Currently, the pension that they receive from the TSDBF is their pension with a 2% statutory increase. The ad hoc bonuses that are paid by the TSDBF are not taken into consideration in calculating what amount they're entitled to from the state old age pension. If the increase rule were to be changed to move to an inflation-linked increase rule, there would not be an ad hoc bonus. Those pensioners that qualify to receive a state old age pension would still qualify, but the money that they would receive, the cash flow they would receive, would be limited, assuming they get only a pension from the TSDBF and from the state, would be limited to the value of the state old age pension, because now all of their receipts from the fund are taken into consideration in evaluating their entitlement for the state old age pension. And that would be the impact, in fact, on all pensioners who receive a pension lower than the state old age pension and who could then claim, provided they qualify, meet other qualification requirements.
That's quite a substantial number of pensioners,
32,000 out of 74.
I presume that the Transnet, I think you call yours an ex-gratia payment, do you? That's just out of your goodwill, let's say. But that also is not taken into account. And should we go with the inflation linked, what would happen to your bonus? You haven't mentioned that at all.
Madam Chairperson, you're correct. The ad hoc bonuses paid by Transnet are not taken into account, but we did note towards the end of our presentation that those bonuses that Transnet pays would continue to be paid subject to our affordability, but would continue to be paid, and those bonuses are always geared towards addressing, in particular, the previously disadvantaged and the long service with very low pensions, so those would continue.
Madam Chair, if I can just add, the main reason for these amounts not actually being guaranteed was to actually address the issues around the SOAP and the 32,000 individuals that actually do receive the SOAP. So that was just a point of clarity in terms of why these ad hoc bonuses from Transnet and the ad hoc bonuses from the TSDBF were actually not guaranteed.
So what we are saying, from what I'm gathering now, that 32,000 pensioners will not benefit by a 75% CPI increase. So 32,000 of your pensioners at this point in time, as far as cash flow is concerned, will not benefit by a 75% increase. Because his pension will stay constant.
Chairperson, a point of order. Are we busy answering questions from the presenters?
No, I need to say, sir, that in these meetings, it's the committee members who ask the questions.
I apologize.
And try to deal with it.
I apologize.
I just didn't want to sound rude, but that is the case. Thank you.
I apologize.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dr. Quinoff then also asked about the retrospective calculations and the use of the dates 2000 and the use of the dates 2006. The reference to 2000 is because the TSDBF was established on the 1st of November 2000, and the reference to 2006 is because in the case of the scenarios other than the last scenario, which was the uplifting the base from the 2000 all the way forward, is from 2007, i.e. from after 1 April 2006, the fund was moving into a surplus position. There was also a question about, has consideration been given to assisting on any other basis than a CPI-linked increase? It was the consideration of the impact of the ad hoc bonuses, as well as the fact that if those bonuses were guaranteed, they would impact on those pensioners receiving SOAP, that the ad hoc bonus rule was introduced, which provided for payments from the fund to its pensioners when the fund had available funding, and that was seen as an alternative to a CPI-linked rule. And as Anaj mentioned, those bonuses are not guaranteed because they would then be taken into account in considering the amount of the state old age pension that persons were entitled to. There was one final question, sorry, which was how was the 1.6 billion rand calculated? It does actually touch on a question from Dr. van Dijk. Dr. van Dijk, you asked about what the cost would be to uplift the base from 2000 to 2006 using 75% of CPI and from 2006 to 2010, and it's the 1.6 billion that's noted on the bottom of the slide, which is back pay. I think that was the question. So not taking the impact on the fund going forward, which is in the calculation, but the back pay. And I'd just like to ask the actuary to advise on how that calculation, that number was calculated.
Thank you. In terms of the 1.6 billion rand, what we did is we looked at at the pensioners' pensions as at 2010. We've worked it back to the year 2000. Remember, all the pensioners, you know, the fund didn't have new pensioners retiring after 2000, so it's almost what we call a stationary population, or, you know, there's no new people coming in. What we then did is we worked back to the pension as it was at 2000, gave it 75% increases on an annual basis to 2006, 100% thereafter, accumulated those cash flows, subtracted what the pensioner actually received in monthly payments, and that's the difference. 1.6 billion in terms of the setup, we did not include interest or any other calculations. It's pure monetary values. The pension that they would have received, 75% 2000 to 2006, 100% thereafter, the difference between what they should have received if that was implemented versus what they actually received.
All right. Honourable Kraling, is this a bit of a follow-up on this particular one?
Chairperson, just on the point of information there, I asked two other questions as well.
Yes, no, we're not finished. I think, can we come back unless, yeah.
Thank you, Madam Chairperson. Dr. van Dijk asked for confirmation that the bonuses paid were to confirm that they were once-off bonuses and not guaranteed, and that they don't uplift the base. That's correct. The ad hoc bonuses paid by the TSDBF are not guaranteed. They're always subject to affordability, and they don't impact on the base pension of the pensioners. You commented then on the use of the dates 2000 and 2006. As well, I think in the calculation that was provided, the calculation at the bottom, and you mentioned it in your question, is that at the bottom here, which was an additional scenario that was specifically requested to be presented in this portfolio committee, it was requested that 75% be used from 2000 to 2006 because that was the GEPF's increased policy over that period of time, and the 100% from 2006 to 2010. The fact that we've used very similar dates is just because 2000 is when the fund was established, and 2006, as I've previously said, that following financial year it moved into a surplus. So they talk to each other, but accidentally. The question about how the back pay of $1.6 billion was calculated has been answered, and then you also asked for confirmation to say that the 75% CPI increase going forward was affordable. Yes, absolutely. Then, Madam Chair...
Just one more about the civil servants. Treating pension as civil servants.
And
that's a responsibility. You know, you as Transnet.
Mm-hmm.
Madam Chair, there's probably two questions in there. I think the first one was, do we have a liability? And as Transnet, as we said, generally, we're not aware of any liabilities that we have, other than the ones that are disclosed in our financial statements. In terms of the treating of the individuals as civil servants, I don't know if Piet, you want to have a go at that question?
Avril?
Oh, Avril's got a response to that question.
On the way in which the civil servants are being treated, if you refer to the slide 10 of Helen's presentation, what is currently in place there, if you look at the GPF line, is that they basically have the 75% rule. So they're giving increases of 75% of inflation. They are, in a similar way to how Helen has explained, if it's affordable, they're also going to declare bonuses that would then bring the people up to 100% of inflation, but the 100% is not guaranteed. What is guaranteed is the 75% of inflation.
Okay. And was that also the comment that you wanted to make? All right. Thank you, Vic.
Chair, I think there was one final question from yourself around the on the presentation that was done, the 10 to 20 years, and the difference in the pensions there.
Thank you. That number was actually well spotted. You know, in terms of the setup between 10 and 20 years, the issue that arises in there is a lot of that, the average being 1140, which is slightly less than the 0 to 10-year period, is mainly as a result of introducing previously disadvantaged widows, which we didn't have full service for, which the assumption was they had 15 years service when their husband died in service. So that number is perhaps artificially drawn down because we didn't have the information.
All right, members, with that, are there still questions of clarity we need to be looking at? Honourable Member Kraling, Dr. Kurnoff, Van Dalen, and Honourable Member Ambrosini,
yeah.
And Honourable Member Van Dijk.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I mean, I'm still slightly confused as to why we seem to be using the base year of 2006 the whole time. And I understand that you said that it's because it's the first time the fund declared a surplus or had a surplus at that stage. But I don't think we should be looking at this from the perspective of the fund. We should be looking at this from the perspective of the pensioners. And the pensioners from 2000 have essentially seen their real income being reduced by about 4% each year. And I think that should be our starting point, is to say what has happened to the pensioners from that point on, not about the fund. And I think that, I mean, when you, for instance, calculate what they would have got if we had an increase of 75% of CPI from 2006, you say it's only about 75 Rand extra. But we should take that back to 2000. Why are we only going back to 2006? What would they have got if we had taken it from 2000 at a 75% of CPI? That to me is the real issue here. And I think that's we should focus in on that, around how this affects the pensioners rather than what state the fund was in that point in time.
Okay, then I have Dr. Kurnoff.
Just a very simple question. The current scenario, 2% plus ad hoc bonus payments versus your proposed 75% CPI adjusted going forward. Just simply put, it seems to me that from the view of the pensioners, there's not much change. As a matter of fact, it may be, if I understand your slides correctly, your presentation, some or all of them may be with a 75% CPI increase be in a worse position? Can I just clarify that? Thanks.
Thank you very much. I have the Honourable Dr. Van Dijk, followed by Dr. Ambrosi.
Chairperson, thank you. Chairperson, yes, I just want to do the follow-up on the answer of the bonuses. I think we must think more about something that has been guaranteed instead of something that is not guaranteed and linked to so-called affordability, because it might happen that as from tomorrow something is not affordable and then it cannot be guaranteed and then bonuses or these ex gratia payments will just fall from the table. Now, there's no calculation in this presentation to prove the so-called words that if we make the bonuses compulsory, then it would lead that some of these people, about 30% or 30,000 people, will not be in a position to claim from the state social pension fund anymore. But, you know, we are working with thumb sucking. There's no calculation being done by the actuary to say that if it's been guaranteed on a 75%, taking into account how much the salary will then increase, how many people will then not be able to claim from the social pension social service, and as from when they will not be able. Because in the presentation, it seems as if 75% and the bonuses almost end on the same level. Now, why then bonuses that's not guaranteed? Put in then a 75% guaranteed and let the actually tell us how many people will indeed then lose the benefit of state social, how many of the 30,000, and as from when. But, you know, just to do thumb sucking and say this and this will happen to create a worse scenario, it's unacceptable. Thank you, Chair.
Dr. Ambrosini, and then we'll come to you, Honourable Van Dijk.
I utilize this. I don't have Van Dijk's voice. I wish I did. Then I wouldn't need a microphone. But you see, my question is really a comment which carries a question. And really the question is, why should I care? I mean, I've read the document very carefully. Sorry for being late. I was at a different meeting. And I read the documents carefully. I've gone through all these, and I see all these explanations. Very young, intelligent, smart people who have come here from the Treasury, much appreciated. Now, lots of good arguments, nice numbers. But, I mean, the bottom line is that Grandpa and Grandma are being defrauded. And because there was a problem at the beginning, and we are comparing what seems to be two different categories. We are comparing a fund which was underperforming since the beginning because it was not sufficiently funded and had a shortfall of 17 billion rands with other funds which are properly funded. And there the concept of affordability, it's a reasonable concept. We'll give you more if we can't afford it. But here we start from a fund which by definition cannot afford more than 2%. And we are faced with a situation where we know the fund can do it. We know that Transnet has a legal obligation to stand surety for whatever liability the fund cannot fund. We know that the fund doesn't want to acquire the legal obligation because then Transnet becomes liable and prefers to have something which is not binding. We know that the state has to provide surety if the balance sheet of Transnet is not sufficient to carry Transnet guarantees. So there are three components. Now, my question, I don't know whether to you, to us, Madam Chair, or to myself, is why do we need to go into all this? We know what we want. We declared it last meeting. We want this problem to be sorted out. We wanted
the pensioners to receive the back pay and to be brought up to 100% of CPI. We adopted a unanimous resolution, and now we need to go into sorting out how the Treasury and Transnet and the fund do it. I mean, with all due respect, we are not paid enough to do this as much as other people are, and it's not our job. We have declared we are the sovereign parliament expressing the sovereign will of the people. We have looked at the situation. We have all agreed across party political lines that it's immoral, unacceptable, and needs to be fixed. And we get a document which doesn't really tell us how they're going to fix it, but tell us why they can't fix it. And I've got a problem with that, Madam Chairman.
Thank you, Honourable Member. I just need to say that I think in these questions that we are trying to probe now, we don't want to jump into something and make it worse for people. So I think we just need really to understand ourselves as members, and then we will be able to move forward. I am going to give the Honourable Member Nana, because he hasn't spoken yet, to have a turn, and then it'll be Mr. Honourable Member van Dalen and Honourable Member McQuenna. You want a question as well. All right, and then perhaps we can start to wrap up this part now, I think, because I think we do need to start to find a way forward.
Well, thanks, Shavasan. I was getting a little bit embarrassed that the meeting was coming to more or less close, I mean, the close, and I've not said a word. And in fact, I'm getting paid to talk. Now, I'm pleading for your protection, Chairperson.
Thank you, but the time is marching on.
Thank you.
So you better use your time.
Thank you
before
very much.
I cut you off.
Thank you very much. In fact, I wanted to say, I would try and talk to your chief whip and lobby that you be the chairperson of this committee, because you don't prescribe time. Now that you have just done that, you have lost my vote. You have lost my vote. No, honestly, chairperson, what I wanted to say was along the lines of what Dr. Ambrosini has just said. And I now find myself, you know, a little bit hamstrung. I may have to wait until a certain time when we get to the way forward.
Thank you. I think we don't want to repeat stuff. Let's be honest enough to confess that. Thank you. The Honourable van Dalen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to know, I get the feeling that in the presentation, the presenters were saying, well, the bonuses are being paid by Transnet. It doesn't come out of the DBS. But then on the other hand, I hear when the fund performs well, then the people get bonuses. So I just wanted to see how the two of that get together. I mean, if these are ad hoc bonuses, the employer says, ach, shame, we have used the money of the people. We didn't get it in front. Give it to them in front, we'll give it to them now because we are making some profit. And then why must the fund perform for that to happen? That's what I need to understand, just on a point of clarity.
Okay, I'll leave you to that. Try again. The Honourable McQuenna.
Yes, Chairperson, thanks for the indulgence. I just want some clarification here, especially from Treasury. Because I wouldn't like us to treat this TS DBF as a unique some aberration. I want to find out from Treasury, because as parliamentarians who are exercising oversight, specifically on public enterprise, but also what we agree upon here should not be an anomaly throughout Parliament and other departments of government. The question to Treasury is, do you have a situation, similar situation, where pensioners have had a fund kept and closed on the basis of corporatization? Because I think that's actually what actually happened here. Transnet said, we are being corporatized now, and because of corporatization, we're now slicing off the people who were pensioners before corporatization. And that's why we've got this problem here. and then insulating them from the newcomers, so to speak, people who contribute post-corporatization, which is 1998, whenever it happened. So I want to find out from Treasury, are we dealing with an anomaly here, or is there another situation where the similar thing happens? So now, when we come up with a parliament, we shouldn't open up a can of worms or say the precedent that's going to be untenable.
Right. Now we're going to wrap up this part of the meeting. We will then take a five-minute break. There is tea, I believe, just arrived. And I think if people help themselves to their tea and their sandwiches and maybe come back to their seats. And I know it won't be 5 minutes, but at max 10 minutes. Thank you. And now if we can just have an answer to those questions, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. One of the points I would just like to make in response, it was more a comment on why are we starting at 2006 in all calculations, not 2000. And I just want to clarify that the 2% rule, increase rule, was there, and I'd like the Principal Officer, Piet Maritz, to comment, well before 2000.
Madam Chair, yes, the 2% increase rule per se was actually in the fund since the inception of the fund. It actually originated from the old Transnet pension fund. So that was not included or put into the rules of the fund in November 2000 when the fund was created, not at all. Those increases that were given all along were based on the rules as it was.
Okay. Okay.
I think then there was a question around the 2% guaranteed statutory increase plus bonus versus the 75% of CPI, and the comment that not much had changed, and maybe people would be worse off. The reality is that at all times the assets that are in the fund will be paid out to the beneficiaries of the fund. So, assuming no increase. When I say no increase in the assets, no contributions to the fund, there will be asset growth. But all of those, that asset value, that $19.6 billion, which was the actuarial valuation at 31 March 2010, all of that will go to the beneficiaries of the fund. So yes, based on the bonuses that have been paid over the last 4 years, based on the performance of the fund and the current financial position of the fund, and therefore anticipated bonuses going forward, which I agree are not guaranteed, but nonetheless, one would have a strong feeling that it would happen based on the past and based on how the fund has managed its assets. There wouldn't be a significant difference between the 2% and the ad hoc bonuses from a cash flow point of view versus the 75% of CPI. The two key differences are if a 75% of CPI rule were implemented, there would be more certainty about the increases that are being received, because one would compare that, which is subject to affordability but being targeted, to the 2% guaranteed amount, whereas the ad hoc bonus is not guaranteed. Our understanding of the legislation around the state old age pension is that if one had to guarantee those bonuses, they would be taken cognizance of in the means test, and therefore the pensioners receiving SOAP would receive less cash flow to the extent of the bonuses. Dr. van Dijk mentioned that there's no calculation to prove that if the bonuses were guaranteed or made compulsory, that pensioners would not potentially not be in a position to claim SOAP. 75%. I'm not sure that the actuary can respond to that. The information that we have, we don't have from every pensioner who does or doesn't claim SOAP. So as we've said, it's a worst case scenario. We've always noted, and it would depend on what each person's pension was.
But it's Chairperson, just on a point of order then, we cannot take it as fact if we say that many or 30,000 will then not be able to access the state social pension fund because they can't prove it. So that is off the table then. Thank you.
Can I ask on what basis you know, what did you base that figure on?
Madam Chair, we based it on the value of the pensions received by those persons as contained in the membership statistics. And, sorry? Who are you? And if I can say, this was a point that was discussed at the last presentation in July as well, where a question was raised about the extent of activity by Transnet in ensuring that everybody who had access to a state old age pension claimed the pension. And there was some descriptions about some of the interventions that had happened of advising people, providing them with forms. But as I say, we can't, and I've always said the potential, 30,000 people. It's based on the pensions that they receive, but it is a significant number.
Okay. I think, obviously, it would be very difficult to work out the scenario that you've asked for right here and now. Maybe, you know, that could be forthcoming when they've had a chance to look at that. I think that would be fair. All right, and then Honourable Ambrosini.
It was more of a comment, yes.
Right. Then we've got the question to the Treasurer from Honourable Mokwena.
So, to my knowledge, and we have done this benchmarking against the other state and enterprises and the GPF pension fund, there isn't one that's exactly the same as this pension fund, the Transnet Second Defined Benefit Pension Fund. The other pension funds are generally open still.
You've answered me because that will help us
yes.
Move forward.
Okay. Right.
I hear again that the bonuses are coming out of the profits of the fund and not from Transnet, as they said in the beginning. I don't know if I'm the only one that heard it, that it's the goodness of the heart of Transnet that they are getting it, and actually it's the fund's performance that is giving them that increase, that bonuses.
Let's just go back to that again. There are two bonuses. Let's just be clear on that. Thank you.
Member van Dalen, yes. Both the TSDBF has a rule that provides for the payment of ad hoc bonuses to its members based on affordability, based on the performance of the fund, and it has paid bonuses to its members. In addition, Transnet has made a choice and a decision to also pay ad hoc bonuses to members of the TSDBF. Both of them have happened. It was the bonuses paid, I think, was included in the presentation in July. I do have that if further clarity is sought. But both the fund and Transnet pay bonuses to members of the TSDBF.
Yes, I think, and then also just to reiterate again, that what they did also say was that it was to try also and bring up the previously disadvantaged, based on that they... payments were made. Right, members, you have 10 minutes, and I promise you that's all. Yes, thank you. If you could just bring everybody in. Skeleton hand here. Thank you very much. We've had a very lengthy interrogation, I think one might even call it, of the presentation. And I really do want to thank the Transnet Treasury, the department, DPE, and Alexander Forbes for just bearing with us. We really do want to be making the right decision here. And so we would now like to move forward, and I would like to ask the members to perhaps chart that way forward for us. And I will ask Dr. Quinoff, please, to speak to that.
Chairperson, thank you for the opportunity. And let me at the outset thank Transnet for the presentation they made, also the presence of the actuaries, the presence of the Department of Public Enterprises, as well as the presence of the National Treasury, as well as the representatives of the pensioners and the groupings they represent. I really, as a committee, we appreciate that they came to this meeting and to listen to the deliberations and also share in this very complex problem before us. I think we want to recognize the needs of the pensioners. We do notice and have regard for the hardships, and we don't take it lightly. It is a complex problem. Can I suggest, Chairperson, that we consider to form a small task team of this portfolio committee to engage possible financial solutions with the National Treasury, with Transnet, with, if needed, the Department of Public Enterprises, as well as with the legal advisors, and that we engage them on funding solutions. We all know now what the Transnet Second Defined Benefit Fund has put on the table. I think I speak on behalf of the committee that we say this is probably not going far enough, but we appreciate what you've put on the table. It's probably going beyond that now, and that we form a committee or task team to investigate and engage with Transnet and National Treasury to find a funding solution. This solution is going forward, looking at the possible future increases of this fund, as well as looking at increasing the base of what we've presented today. And looking also historically, retrospectively, what funding solutions we can find to look at the needs of the pensioners. So in short, I would propose that that will be the way forward, to find a solution to a very complex problem. We cannot rush into it, but I think we need to move with speed and make it as soon as possible for this task team to meet with the relevant departments, find funding solutions, and report back to the committee. The committee can then decide, based on that report they've received, what way they want to go forward, either to accept or to reject or to amend the, on their own. Thank you.
Member McQuinn.
Yes, Chairperson, I would like to support the Honourable Dr. Quinoff, but I think we must move with utmost speed. Yeah, he says we must not rush it. We must rush it. But his motivation is excellent. I endorse it completely. That we must set up the task team. We already have one that's constituting of him, Dr. Quinoff, and Dr. Van Dijk. I don't know who else, but Perez would just enlarge a little bit. He has got an excellent model, Dr. Kurloff, because he says DPE must be there, Treasury must be there, Perez, one person from DPE, one from Treasury, actuary, et cetera, et cetera. And perhaps get one or two other people, perhaps Mr. Grayling or Mr. Nama from our side there. And then we must ask perhaps you to convene it, because that task team is going to report to us as a portfolio committee. We can't say our chairperson must convene it. We ask you, because you've chaired this session very ably. And then we can come and report to this portfolio committee then. And well, we need a verbal spudige oplossing immediately. This thing has been generally said embarrassment, honestly. But it must be equitable. Whatever solution you come up with must be equitable. It must be one side fits all. It cannot just be pigeonholed and treated as a special dispensation for this, because we've already had, when I asked that question to Treasury, and they say, this is an anomaly. We must not deal with an anomaly. We must make sure that there's equitable treatment of all civil servants. Yeah, thank you.
Dr. Van Dijk?
Chairperson, yes. As I understand it, I agree 100% with Dr. Kurnoff. If I understand it well, there was a plea from the chairperson of this committee, Mrs. Fakie Mentor, that this problem been resolved before the end of this calendar year. Secondly, that a task team will negotiate with all the role players, as mentioned by Dr. Kurnoff, and if we fail to get to an acceptable agreement, then the committee will take its own initiative to take a resolution to be forwarded then to the House. Thank you, Chair.
Dr. Ambrosini.
Madam Chairman, I hope I'm not going to tarnish my political credentials by agreeing with Dr. Kurnoff. the Honourable Mokwena, you know, it's, when everyone agrees, it seems...
You better sit down quickly.
But I do want to stress my agreement. Perhaps just for my own clarity, I want to check whether I understood Dr. Kurnoff's proposal correctly. Because there are committees which make progress and committees which don't. The mandate of this task team is to look at the funding model, to fund a back pay, whether it's 2000 or 2006, and to fund an adjustment to CPI, whether it's 75 or 100%. To be done by, to be affected by the end of the year, to make true to the commitment made publicly by our chairperson that relief would be coming to the pensioner by the end of the year, on a sustainable and permanent basis, failing which, as Dr. Van Veek was stressing, we as a committee will impose our own decision on the matter if the task team fails to bring a consensus position. So that's my understanding of what is being decided, and I surely support it wholeheartedly. Thank you.
Thank you. Before the Honourable Member von Dahlen starts to sing here, let me just perhaps sum up. We are in agreement then that we do have, Honourable Member Mokwena, we do have an existing nucleus of a task group. We have Dr. Kurnoff and Dr. Van Dijk serve on that, and they, in fact, together very ably set us on the road forward here with this, and that's how we come to be here today. What the suggestion is that we just increase that a little bit. The departments, the National Treasury, Transnet, DPE, and a legal person, I think that goes without saying. Those will be the people that the members of the task group would want to engage with. We would need then increasing the honourable members on that task group, and I need to say this, We need to, we've got one member from the ANC, one member, this is not a political thing, but it's the way it needs to work, and one member from the DA, but I think the opposition parties are fully in agreement, you know, on this. But we would need another member from the ANC to work with that, and I think the smaller the group, the quicker we're going to get the job done. I want to agree with the members that we are not going to drag our feet. A task group has a particular task to attend to. It's not like a committee meeting. My own suggestion would be that we need to meet even as early. You know that Parliament actually is closing today for recess. We're saying this task group needs to meet even as early as next week or very early the following week. But we want to...
Chairperson, don't be modest about it. I propose that you, you come from the ANC and you should also, you should convene that committee, that subcommittee, that task team, that's all. And then you can report to the rest of us. Yeah. So that solves that problem.
All right. Thank you, honourable member. But I think we just need to have the approval of the members. Is that acceptable? All right. Good. So we will then want to convene that meeting ASAP, and I really mean that, because as has been said here already, stated by Dr. Ambrosini, we are honouring our chairperson, who we're really is very sorry that she could not be here today, because this is something very close to her own heart. So with that, I think I have covered in summary what we will do, and then we will report back to our first meeting in October. We are due to return on about the 11th or so of October. That Tuesday meeting, maybe for the 12th, we will then report to back to the meeting. Are we agreed on that? Then, soon after that? Correct. And that only leaves me to say thank you to everybody, the honourable members who have really been exercising their minds on this, and to the departments who have been present here today, thank you very much. And then I also just want to concur with Dr. Kuhnhoff. Thank you to the pensioners who've come and sat through this long meeting, and I'm sorry you were not able to voice, but you did have a voice at the last meeting, and we are very aware of your plight. So thank you very much to everybody for this meeting, and I promise you, perhaps I shouldn't say that, we are committed as a committee. I endorse what our chairperson has said. And we will move forward on this. I will also say that the task group will probably meet not necessarily in Cape Town, but where the most of the officials are situated. Perhaps the members then that might only be three would go, if we're talking about Pretoria, we can get closer there up to Joburg and we can find a venue there. Accepted? Thank you. I declare the meeting closed. Next week. I'll be